Hi, I'm Howard Jones, and you're listening to Life Minute TV.
Electronic music pioneer Howard Jones has been a constant presence on the international music scene for the past four decades. With a unique style and sound that invented a new wave all his own, he's still wowing fans across the globe and has just released Live at the O2. While hitting the Northeast arenas on tour a few months back, he stopped by our Life Minute studio so we could get to know him well. This is a Life Minute with Howard Jones.
Howard Jones in the house. Thanks for joining us on Life Minute.
So happy to be here.
So glad to be with you in person this time.
Yes, that's right. It was Zoom before, wasn't it?
Yes. Right after COVID on Zoom. So it's great to have you in real life. You look amazing.
Well, thank you very much.
And how are you doing?
I'm doing super well. We're just coming to the end of the tour, and it's gone so well that I'm so buzzed up with it. We've had amazing reception, you know, sold out shows. We had to add shows. I mean, and I haven't had that for a while, you know, it's been building towards that, but suddenly it's all like caught fire. So I'm very, very excited about
it. That's so great.
There's plans. The plans to do another leg. I'm sure we'll be doing something this next summer as well.
What are fans going to get when they see you guys play?
I think of my show as being like a hybrid show because, you know, my love of technology has always been there since the beginning, but I was trained as a pianist. You know, I went to music college, classical piano till I was 21. So I have these two sides to me, which is like, you know, accomplished playing, and then the technology side, which I try and keep up with. So the show's a mixture of those two things. So we'll do some banging tunes with the electronics and the sequencers and everything, and then go to the piano with my guitarist and Nick, my bassist, and we'll do some acoustic songs and involve the audience in that. So to me, that's the perfect balance, and I've worked towards that because we've done both things. I've done the trio where we've, you know, made it mainly acoustic, then we've done the electronic. Now I'm just sort of marrying the two together, and the fans seem to really like that because it's sort of, you get a break from all the banging tunes, and then you can sort of like savor the song side of it. You know, No One Is to Blame and Life in One Day, and I've got Nick Beggs with me. So we do Too Shy as well, his big, huge hit, you know, here. And the audiences love that. So I just, you know, I'm so lucky that I've got so many songs that people know. They join in, you know, and it's like a sort of celebration, really.
It's so nice. And I think there's been a resurgence of 80s. Have you noticed that as well?
I mean, obviously, I've been touring the whole time since the 80s. But it seems to be that there's a new generation discovering the music. And that, I suppose, is the most exciting thing for me, is that people, those songs they're hearing for the first time. So it's like a new song. How exciting is that? And they're liking it. And when I see the young people down the front, and maybe their parents have brought them to the show, maybe they've been force-fed Howard Jones their whole life, and they're coming to the shows, and they're dancing like crazy. They're getting the EDM influences that we have. And yeah, it's very exciting. Yeah.
That's so great. And your songs have been in so many things too. Stranger Things and Breaking Bad and Watchmen, the Watchmen film. So, I mean, they're seeing it there too for the first time, I think, as well.
Yeah, well, that's exciting for me as well. And get asked to have my songs in those high profile. Well, Stranger Things, I said, yeah, please have the song, please put it in, because I watch it myself, you know, and I love it. And but I saw, like, you know, the huge Kate Bush effect when her song is featured. But they play the whole of Things Can Only Get Better, I think it's in season three. Suddenly all my streaming is like going through the roof, and I'm thinking, that's because the kids who've never heard it before, hearing the playlist and they're getting into it. So, you know, the music business is always surprising me, you know, the changes, and you have to roll with it all, you know. My daughter now is running my social media, and she is absolutely smashing it, you know, because she is from that generation that understands what, you know, what social media should be, and I'm on TikTok.
That's great.
Going back to your first question, I think it's all these things suddenly coming together. I mean, what I'd love to be is sort of a multi-generation artist that kids could come and all the generations could feel comfortable with being at the show. That's what I'd love to happen. Yeah.
Well, it is happening. I'd say it is happening for sure. And your kids seem very helpful. Your son, you were saying before.
Yeah. My Jasper designed this T-shirt for me, and he's done a whole set of them for me, and he comes with me shopping to get clothes, and because we're all into fashion, it's kind of in the family DNA, you know. My daughter Mika, who's doing, you know, saying to you earlier. So they all help me get great clothes and things that will work for me. And yeah, even the way I open the show in this big pink coat is actually my son's coat, and he lent it to me for this, you know. So, you know, and they spot all the bargains, you know, because I don't get sponsored by anyone, because I like to be independent of all that. Then you don't feel like you're beholden to anyone.
Right.
You know, just we go to secondhand shops and look back through the archives of my clothes, because I've always kept everything, you know, through the years, so we can mix and match with new things, and that's all part of the fun. Going out on stage for me is like, you want the audience to feel a sense of drama and, oh, you know, what's he going to wear tonight, and how crazy is he going to be, you know. And I always like that when I see artists, and so it's just a natural thing for me.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's so great. And what is it with music and fashion? I guess it's just a creative thing, right? There's such a connection.
I think it goes back, when I started out, I was a one-man band with my synths and drum machines and my friend Jed, who was doing like performance art dancing, you know, in characters, different characters. And then we borrowed TVs and had VHS player with videos so always the visuals were such a big part of what I did, and the drama. So that's really just continued, you know, through all this time. And of course MTV, it was a natural for me, because the way you present yourself visually is just as important as the music. It came from the shows. So it's always a very natural thing. Yeah.
That's so neat. And you started playing were you seven when you started playing?
Yeah, my parents were Welsh, so there's a huge musical tradition in Wales that you sing, you recite poetry, when you go and visit your relatives, you play the piano. They were really keen for me to learn the piano. And, you know, like many people, I hated it at first because I couldn't go out to play with football with my mates and cricket and stuff. And then I got to the age of nine, and I heard something on the radio, a tune that I could play on the piano, and suddenly they couldn't stop me playing. You know, I mean, I became a nuisance, hours a day at the piano. And
what was the tune that you heard?
It was actually Puppet on a String by Sandy Shaw, and she won the Eurovision Song Contest with it. And I heard it, I can play this. That was it. It just opened the door to me, like playing other tunes and learning other tunes, and then eventually doing my own. And at the same time, I really realized that playing all the classical music was giving me the facility to play, you know, so it was great. Yeah.
That's amazing. So it's a little bit of both, like you were self-taught, but you can also play by ear too.
Yeah, that's right. And I've never been particularly good at sight reading, you know, some amazing classical musicians, they can see a piece for some and then just play it. It's always been a struggle for me doing that, but I can hear things and learn it, you know, that way. And I've gone back to, you know, doing a bit more study of classical music recently to learn, you know, just learn basically about harmony, and, you know, any quality input can trigger stuff within you, you know, even though I'm not a classical musician. I appreciate what those composers did and how they worked and everything, yeah.
Amazing. So you're still learning. That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
There's absolutely always something to learn, I guess.
Lifelong,
right?
Lifelong, yeah.
And then you created that electronic sound. How did you, like, how did that happen?
I was at music college up in Manchester. It was the Royal Northern College of Music. I fluked getting in. They said I played Bach with a jazz feel, which was like kind of a compliment really to me. So I managed to get in, but then 2 years in, I thought, I love playing some of this music, but I really need to get on with my own music. And I was playing in bands up there, and I was on the radio doing pieces, you know, in the middle of the night. I thought, but I really need to get out. So I moved. I just quit. And I said, sorry, I've got to leave. And my piano teacher begged me to stay because he said, oh, well, play me something of yours. So I played him some of my pieces that I've been working on. And he said, please don't leave. You know, go on the composer's course. But my mind was made up and I left. Went back to live with my mum and dad and got this idea for a one-man electronic band because the equipment was just coming to the level where you could just about afford it. I was doing like all kinds of jobs. I was working in factories. I was giving piano lessons. I was doing all kinds of jobs for friends. I had about four jobs to get the money coming in so I could buy equipment. And then started doing two or three shows a week with the, you know, the synths and the drum machines. And it just developed from there. It was because there was no one around that I really knew that I could form a band with. There wasn't a singer around, so I had to learn how to sing my own songs myself. I always thought someone else would sing them, but, you know, it turned out that it had to be me. We played in tiny places, but people really loved it. You know, it was something new, like this is a new sound and we're going to follow this guy, you know. And they would follow me up to London when we played in London. And it was a very genuine grassroots build. And that's what always sort of saddened me when I finally got signed and the music press said that it was like a kind of manufactured pop star, you know what I mean? But couldn't have been further from the truth. I was playing everything myself. I was writing everything myself and, you know, inventing a new way of doing things that influenced a whole generation of EDM artists. It's like, the great thing about when you get that kind of negative thing come to you, it makes you strong because it gives you a backbone. So like really believe in what you do and to keep, I'm going to keep going. You know, you're giving me fuel. You're giving me the energy to go. So in a way, you know, you can turn anything to your advantage if you have that attitude.
Yeah, I love it. That's great. Mm-hmm. What do you think of music today with all of the technology at your fingertips now? Are you a foe or?
No, I think, you know, it's like everything can be used, you know, in a great way. And then there'll be a few people who want to use it to steal your stuff. You know what I mean? I mean, it's always going to be the case. So I'm never afraid of new developments like the AI thing. Now, it's just people have to be responsible with it and realize, and not use it to destroy the music business. I mean, for me as a artist creating things, to have those tools can be really useful to make music that maybe people, you know, sounds that people have never heard before. And, you know, when I started out, they wanted to ban me from the Musicians Union because I was using synthesizers that they thought would be getting rid of people's jobs and stuff like that. But of course, you end up employing hundreds and hundreds of people to work with you. And then there was sampling, and then people go, oh, this is going to ruin everything. People are going to just steal your sounds. And okay, well, a few people did, but also we got this explosion of amazing new music because of sampling. So I'm always hopeful that human beings will always choose the honorable way to use the new tech. And there'll always be a few that don't, but, you know, that's the way it is.
Yep, yeah, absolutely. What inspires you creatively?
You know, I have my Buddhist practice and I've, in this nearly 30 years now, I've been practicing. So the wisdom of that, you know, teaching really, really inspires me. And I always try and put that into my work, into my lyrics. The lyrics are very important to me. I think of music as being this very privileged position because you sort of get into people's heads with music. So make sure, I want to make sure that the words that go with the music are of benefit to the person who's listening. And they may not need it at the moment or need it most of the time, but there's always a time when you need a boost and you need, you know, a little bit of encouragement. I hope that the music would, the lyrics would bring that to people and the spirit of the song, you know, the uplifting nature of it. So that's what I've always thought was my role, you know, is to do that and to stick to it and keep going with it.
What comes first, the lyrics or the music?
It's usually the music, and then I've got loads of subjects that I want to write about and things I want to talk about, and then I choose the right vibe of the music to go with that. And that takes the longest the time for me doing the lyrics, because it's the most important thing. The music flows quite well, but the lyrics, they take a bit of time, yeah.
Did your parents see you become famous?
Yes, they did. Bless them. They ran my fan club, and my mother particularly wrote to thousands of young people struggling with things. And she wrote to them personally, encouraging them. And people are still coming up to me now, and with these yellow sheets she used to write on. This is a letter from your mother. And it's like, what an incredible legacy that she left. And she promoted the values that I have so beautifully. And she used to do things like send photographs that she shouldn't be sending. It was like she treated them all like family, you know. So she's sending like pictures of Jan, my wife, and the kids as babies, you know. It was like just sending them to fans, because to her, they were her extended family. I mean, what? Isn't that incredible? I mean, we never charged anything for the fan club. It was always, you know, we just wanted to do it because they're fans, you know, look after them. And then they toured with me. And the funny thing happened with that was that everywhere we went, and they were on the tour bus with me, you know, they were in their 60s on the tour. And everywhere we went, they'd get off the bus and there'd be fans waiting for them. To
wow.
take them round, show them the sights.
That's amazing.
And, you know, I used to say that they're more famous than I am. I mean, they've got more love coming towards them than, but I thought that was a wonderful thing, you know. And they had the time of their life going, you know, actually meeting the people they were writing to, and they used to sell the merch, and you know, it was a real mom and pop.
That's beautiful.
Thing. But the fans loved it because that was their connection so with me, you know, so it was great. Yeah,
that's so great. Mm. I love it.
Yeah.
And now you're still keeping that kind of family tradition going, sounds like. The whole family's involved.
Yeah, yes, yeah, that's right. They've all got their own, you know, careers and things as well, which is wonderful. But they really support me so well. Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah.
That's awesome. Tell us a little bit about your new music.
We put out an album. It was I've never played the O2 in London. It's quite an iconic gig, you know. So we recorded. You never know whether it's going to work, whether recording is going to be all right, whether you had technical issues or something like that. But it all sounded so good, and we were all really pumped up, you know, playing that venue. So mixed it with my friend Robbie and thought it's like a souvenir of the show we're doing at the moment. So if you want to hear where we've got to with it, the songs. I mean, there's the songs on the record, but now, all these years later, they're much more up to date, and they're the way I want things to sound now, and it reflects that. So, I thought it'd be good, you know, good time to release a live album.
How did you twist them when you say like a little more updated? What did you do?
Yeah, well, you know, things like Things Can Only Get Better. We do the song quite faithful to the original. And then we go into this sort of remix version that's like pumped up. It's like EDM. Everyone's up, you know, jumping out of their seats, and all the young people are going, yeah! but we try and get everyone doing that. It's the song, but it's like a remix version. And then things like To Get to Know You Well, you know, I put in like South American rhythms in the middle, and then we do, you know, stuff just with the audience. Is just, you know, they're all updated and all. I always want to present like a little surprise in songs that people know, so they, it's not just like the record that, oh yeah, something extra you're getting tonight.
Do you have a favorite?
At the moment, my favorite is Hide and Seek, which is a slow song, and I'm always a little bit nervous about doing things that are that slow live, because most of the set is really up, but we've done a new electronic version of it, and it really, it's got like a heartbeat rhythm, you know, and it just creates an incredible atmosphere, and then you can go back to the more, you know, bouncy stuff. So it's like taking people on a journey during the set of like all different emotions, and then at the end it's like celebrating being alive. I want people to walk out of the show with a spring in their step and ready to take on any difficulty and any problem in their life, and to really, you know, be like boosted by having seen the show. That's my aim.
That's so good. I love that. And then there's a vinyl out with it too, right?
Yeah. Everyone That's wants exciting. Vinyl now yeah. of everything. And it sounds good, and I get it. You know, you put the thing on one side and then have to flip it over. It's growing, the vinyl thing, yeah.
Yep,
so we always put everything in vinyl now.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. And of course, a DVD version as well.
Yeah,
out.
Yeah.
So that's great. And a limited edition vinyl, right? It's limited edition?
Yes.
And what's next? What are you working on next?
I set myself a goal of like doing 4 albums, and I've done 3 of them. It was Engage, Transform, and then Dialogue. And now the next one is called, it's going to be called Global Citizen. And I'm not quite sure what it's going to be yet. I think I'm thinking we'll record it here in America, because I spend so much time here now, and I want to record with American musicians, and it'd be a much more of a song-based album, maybe not so electronic, because the last 3 were. But this one, to really capture a lot of different influences from around the world, you know, global rhythms, and musically represent the fact that we are living on one planet, you know, and then the lyrics will reflect that everything we do affects everyone else, and, you know, we've got to be aware that we've only got one planet and one world, we've got to look after it. And so that's going to be the theme of it, and I think having as many collaborators as possible is going to be a way of sort of reflecting that as a philosophy, because if I just did it on my own, that's not really being a global citizen. It's like, you know, there's a place for that. But if I involve a lot of people helping me to make the record, that's like, you have to cooperate, you have to listen, you have to have dialogue with people. And so the music should reflect that philosophy.
Yeah. Who are you going to get? Do you know yet?
Lots of people have been saying, come to the studio, let's do things. But I don't know. I don't know if they'll have me, for sure. but I've made a lot of new friends over here, so yeah.
Where's your home base?
Well, we have a house in the southwest of England, in Somerset. A beautiful country location. And then we have a house in London, in Brixton, which is the opposite of that. Very vibey, very multicultural society there. You know, incredibly good fun, and two of my kids live there, so when we have a room, a guest room there, so we go back and forth, really. Yeah,
that's nice.
Yeah,
but you're here a lot, so you're thinking of doing it here.
I think we're gonna spend more time in America now. Yeah,
good. The tour, I guess, tell me a little bit about the tour. OMD, ABC, Haircut 100, all great bands. Mm-hmm. Were you ever competitive with them back in the day?
No.
No.
I know how hard it is to get to the position to be actually doing your music and putting records out. It was really, really hard to get there. And you just have to admire anybody who's done that. And I just enjoy other people's music. I can learn something from everyone's music. And anybody who does it well, you know, it's like, oh, yes, it's so great. I just was so happy to be in that position. I haven't got any time to be competing with anyone. I'm really happy for anyone's success, because it's so hard to do. So if you're doing well, you know, I want to celebrate that with you. I've tried to nurture that within myself as I go on, because we can never compare ourselves to other people. We're all unique individuals. There's no point in doing it. Like, you do what you do, I do what I do, and let's like just celebrate both things, you know, and be happy for people who are doing well, and then people who aren't doing well, give them some support, you know. Like, that's the way I want to live my life. Don't always get it 100% right, you know. There's always stupid thoughts that come in, but you just like park them, Don't want to be like that.
I love it. Your parents did good. Gosh, sold upwards of 10 million albums worldwide. That's amazing.
Well, you know, it's a modest amount compared to some people, but I always think for me, it's been about being on the radio, which has been
still
being played, those songs. And so that music
songs.
Can be part of the culture and part of the...
It sure is.
That everyone knows. I mean, so many people, they don't really know who I am or my name even, but they know the songs. Isn't that great? It's like kind of the best thing.
Yeah, I never thought of that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very, very, very happy with that. And that's the legacy is that those songs will probably be played way into the future. It's great.
Well, that's for sure. Mm. When you wrote all those songs, those hits, you were so young too. Mm. I always thought, how did you come up with it? Like, all of the songs personal anecdotes? All of them, or
they were coming from a point of view of why did I want to write? You know, what was I going to say? I wasn't as a traditional love song kind of guy or breakup song person. I wanted to put philosophy into the work about ask the questions, how do you live a successful life and a happy life that is not just self-centered, but is like considers other people as well as yourself? Look after yourself, of course, but look after the people around you as well. And so how do you live a life like that? And what lyrics would promote that way of looking at the world? So, you know, new song, you know, don't crack up, bend your brain, see both sides and throw off mental chains, throw off the things that hold you back. Like to get to know you well. You know, I want to get to know you so I can discover what we've got in common. People have different views about things, different thoughts, different cultures, religions, whatever. But there's loads of things that we can agree on. Let's find those things and celebrate that. You know, and then things can only get better. Like, when things get tough and you're having a really bad time, okay, it's bad at the moment, but, you know, keep believing in the future. You can turn this around. You're amazing. You're a human being. You can turn this around. And if we choose, we can turn it around. So it was always those themes that I was interested in putting out there. And then trying to live up to that myself, you know. So it's like if you're going to say that, then there's a good pressure on you to live up to those ideals.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I love it. Mm-hmm. Any more? Are there any other ones? What other songs?
No One Is to Blame. I was asked about that today and saying, well, No One Is to Blame. You know, what do you mean by that? I finally got to the point where thinking, well, you know, what it really is about is that it is difficult to be a human being for everyone. Everyone has their struggles and problems and difficulties. And we're a result, aren't we, of all the things that have happened to us. You know, in Buddhism, we call it karma. You know, it's all the things that have got to where you are. And you can't be entirely responsible for all that. You can't be to blame for your genetic makeup or where you were born or what circumstances, you know. So we can't carry around this sort of terrible weight of blame. Even if we make mistakes, well, we can correct them tomorrow. So it's a song that's saying life is frustrating sometimes, but, you know, don't hammer yourself down. Think of how you could, you know, turn it around and move on. So I think that's what the song means for me.
You think?
I think, yeah, it's still
evolving.
Are we
allowed to look at the menu and eat?
Yes, that's right.
So we can eat. Oh, that's another good one. What other ones?
Think of things like, you know, Pearl in the Shell, which is about, you know, every person having this incredible unique ability. Everyone's got amazing some unique ability that don't hide it away. Let us share it. You know, let's have the benefit of your whatever you've got to offer. You know, don't hide it away. Don't be scared of it.
They're so positive. Your lyrics are so positive. That's so rare in the world, really.
Well,
you know.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I always feel and still do aware. I'm very aware of the other side, you know, the little voice in your head that can just bring you down and stop you being positive and going becoming miserable and not, you know, defeated. I'm very aware of that. So, you know, it's a battle that I feel that a lot of us, well, we all have to go through all the time, battling that negative voice. And so the songs are about that battle, and they're about, you know, we've got to win that one. We've got to win it, because then we can, you know, be supporting other people with our strength, you know.
Love it. Especially nowadays, in that crazy world that we're living
in. Yeah, exactly. It's harder than ever.
You sort of answered this, but what does music do for people?
Well, I think it's totally unique music. It can really lift people's spirits. It can really share a feeling, you know, of sorrow or happiness, or it can take people out of their current predicament and problems and difficulties, and it can transport them to another place, you know, for a bit of respite from all that. Yeah, it's an amazing thing. And I always get worried when it gets undervalued, you know, because actually music is so valuable, and we must protect it, and we must support artists who are making music, and we must support young people who are making music, and there should be music lessons at school, and, you know, choirs, and, you know, it's one of those things. Can you see tangibly the value? No, you can't, but go to a gig and see how that deeply affects people and lifts them, you know, for that moment that they're there, and hopefully they can carry that over. You know, I was worried, you know, because you can't monetize it necessarily, you know, that feeling, those feelings and the impact that it can get, oh, well, we don't need that, you know, we really do need it. People need it. And let's support it in any way we can, you know.
So for you, you had that drive that you had to create it, you had to give it. You weren't seeking fame or anything.
No, I don't crave attention. I've never craved attention. It is what comes with doing this, but it wasn't the motivation. It was like, oh, I love music. I want to do my music. I want people to hear it. This is what I can do. I've been doing it since I was 7. I want people to hear what I've done, because that's my contribution. That's always been the prime motivation. Because if it's not, then it will crumble. You know, like, I was thinking of the Rolling Stones. Well, they're still playing music in their 80s, and it's amazing. The reason that they, in my opinion, is because they love music, and they love that genre of music, and they study the people who inspired them, and that's why they're still up there doing it so amazingly well now. It's not money or fame, it's about the music. And I think if you really want to be giving it your all for your whole life, it's got to come from those motivations.
Who were your influences?
Obviously my classical piano work was a big influence. My mother played the radio all the time. We didn't have a record player or anything at home. My mother was always listening to the radio, so I'm hearing the Beatles and I'm hearing the Tremolos and those 60s bands. My dad bought me a little transistor radio when I was 11, and I listened to pirate radio stations. And then I was going to see gigs. Then when I was 14, I went to the Isle of Wight Music Festival and saw The Doors and The Who and Emerson, Lake and Palmer and Joni Mitchell and Jimi Hendrix. I was so fortunate to see all those people on the same bill, and I've missed out loads of them that were incredible. And then, you know, Stevie Wonder, Keith Emerson, a huge influence on me with keyboard playing and synthesizers. And Elton John's brilliant songwriting. And yeah, I mean, there's just a million people that you just feed on, you know, and then inspires you to make your own thing.
What else do you play? Do you just keyboards? Do you play other things too?
I did play the French horn when I was at school.
Oh, wow.
In the school orchestra. So that's a beautiful instrument to play. I wasn't very good at it. I tried the guitar for a bit, but I realized I was never going to be as good on that as I wanted to be in my head, and so just concentrated on this and the keyboards.
And then how did you know you could actually sing? I guess it was dumb luck because you weren't expecting it, right?
Yeah, so yeah, I never thought of myself as a singer, but it'll have to do for now. And then gradually took it more and more seriously. And in my later years, I have singing lessons and wanting to keep it in good shape, going forward. And it really it's actually improved a lot since I've been actually applying. When you learn the piano, you have to practice every day. Same with the voice. You've got to develop those tiny little muscles that give you the facility to do whatever you want with it. I've woken up to that now and realized that it all matters.
And how is creating now different than it was then for you? Maybe it's not?
Well, you know that when you make a new record, it's not going to travel as far as those early records did.
You never know.
That's pretty much true for everyone. I mean, the fans love it, right? The fans, and so I make it for them. I make that music for them. I know you won't be like, those early albums, because it's a whole different thing. But I still want to do it because it develops my writing and develops my all sides of what I do and gives me some new things to play live. And I know the fans want me to do it, and it's for them.
I never say never. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, sometimes something can take off, can't it?
Oh, my gosh.
You don't expect, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm. When you're not making music, what are you doing?
Me and my wife, we want to keep really fit and healthy. So we have an exercise bike and then we have a Pilates machine. And that's really for the touring, to keep the strength up and, the ability up. And we both cook, and eating healthy is really important to keep in good shape. And I look after all the Buddhists that practice in Somerset, where I live, and I support them. So that's part of my life at home. And then, practicing every... I mean, it's very music-oriented, but it's the family and looking after that and making sure we're in touch with that. Yeah, I mean, by the time you've done all that, it's like...
I know, there's no time left in the day. So you travel a lot. What's something you always travel with?
Well, I obviously have my beads and my book for my chanting and my little Omomori Gahonzon, which I chant to, which is like... represents the Lotus Sutra. So I always have that. Now that's like...
Have you always done that since you were young?
Yeah. It was since I've been practicing 30 years, so I've always been able to take my mobile practice with me. Yeah. I always have headphones so I can listen to music. I always have a bottle opener in case there's no, to open beer bottles.
Any new music you think is good out there right now, particularly?
Yeah. I mean, I love a classical composer actually called Eric Whitaker, who composes for vocal mainly. He's he's just a genius vocal composer. He has an amazing group of people who can sing incredibly difficult parts, but really moving as well, And so I love him. Jacob Collier I love because he's like a genius young person who can... It's just phenomenal. And I like a guy called Corey Wong, who's really funky stuff, an amazing guitarist, but has incredible musicians around him. I've rediscovered Billy Joel.
Oh, really?
And I'm going through Billy Joel's catalogue, and it's like, oh my God, the songs are just, don't know, are just blowing my mind. And I think, I saw his concert, last concert at the MSG, his 100th, it was on TV. And it was like, whoa. These people inspire you.
Oh, well, that was wonderful. Thank you
great.
So much.
No, great. No, thanks.
That was fantastic.
It's great talking with you. Thank you.
So great to be with you, too, in real life.
Yeah, great. Yay. Yes, that's right.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.